On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Amelia Nickerson, CEO of Atlanta-based First Step Staffing. New to the staffing industry and with a background in nonprofit management, Amelia shares the unique mission of First Step, a nonprofit or alternative staffing firm that is dedicated to finding sustainable jobs and income for individuals transitioning from homelessness. Leslie and Amelia discuss how First Step is making a difference and driving equality and why that matters so much in the current moment. In addition, as a mom of three, Amelia offers her personal take on balancing work and parenting amid COVID-19 and how First Step is working to support its working parents. That's not all, as Amelia also talks about her own career path, her passion for creating change, and the best piece of advice she's ever received. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, and I am the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing. It is my pleasure to welcome Amelia Nickerson to the Edge Podcast. Welcome, Amelia.
Thank you so much for having me, Leslie.
Amelia, you're currently the CEO of First Step Staffing, a role you've been in for all of 4 months. And I guess if you think about it, if anyone's doing the math here, that would mean you stepped into a pretty high profile role right as the pandemic went into high gear. So Amelia, you're not only new to the role of a CEO, but also to staffing. So before, I know we're going to dive into your background and so forth, but before we do that, I think it's really important for everyone, because I'm new to First Step Staffing as well, to perhaps have you share a little bit of background about the company.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nothing like taking over in the middle of a global pandemic. So I'm sure we'll talk through that in a little bit too. So First Step Staffing is a nonprofit staffing agency. So we are a registered 501c3. The technical term is alternative staffing. There's an alternative staffing alliance that we're a member of, and now one of the largest members of that alliance. We go out and get contracts with local businesses and several industries. We primarily focus on light industrial and logistics, but we prioritize who we're placing into those available jobs. So for First Step, that has been men and women experiencing homelessness, veterans, and returning citizens. We started here in Atlanta, Georgia in 2007 by a gentleman named Greg Block, who was looking to give back to his community. And one of the biggest factors missing in a lot of cities when you look at homelessness services is a focus on jobs and income. And staffing was a very easy way to start to fill that gap. So what started as a small nonprofit in 2007 has now grown to serve 6 states. We're located in Atlanta, newly Orlando, Nashville, Philadelphia, Southern New Jersey. And as of December of last year, we had an office open in Los Angeles. So we're really excited to be growing the way we are. Now more than ever, jobs and employment are going to be critical for helping the men and women we serve. We employ about 1,500 people a week, and that number is growing. So I'm excited to be here to be able to tell you a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I'm excited to learn more as we continue with the conversation. I know alternative staffing, as you and I were talking about it, I didn't know about the alliance and a lot of the different things that you all were doing. And one of the things we talk about quite often is how we can make a difference as it relates to diversity, inclusion, and acceptance. And I know later in the conversation, we'll cover off on that a little bit as well. So Amelia, you went from a campaign and research coordinator with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra to the nonprofit sector, to the staffing industry. And I have to say, you're probably the first executive we've had on the podcast who really haven't been in the staffing industry for very long, and obviously new to the role within the last 4 months. So perhaps you could tell us, really, I'm curious about two things with your background, the path to CEO, and also, and these two probably play hand in hand, how you landed in staffing.
Absolutely. Yes. As you could tell from that brief description, it's not a straightforward path by any means. So quite honestly, I started my career in nonprofit management. I'd always wanted to work in arts management and had gravitated towards the development and fundraising side, and started working at the Atlanta Symphony here in Atlanta back in 2004. And I had some great opportunities there, worked with some really great fundraisers, and worked several jobs in the arts over the course of having 3 children and navigating through motherhood and those sorts of things. But what really led me to First Step, I think I had a passion for the nonprofit sector. And the more I got into this work, the more I found that while I enjoyed the arts, what really drove me was helping nonprofits who were doing amazing work find a way to do it even better. I went and ultimately landed after doing some private consulting work with a local firm in Atlanta called Cox Curry & Associates. And first up was a client at the time. They were just starting to grow. They were going through their first kind of major growth mode in Atlanta and were outsourcing all of their, basically their nonprofit to this firm. So I worked with them for several years, helped do grant writing, worked with the boards, worked with the founder and CEO, but they just kept growing and were opening a Philadelphia office and looking to expand beyond that pretty quickly. So I kept telling them this was not something you should be outsourcing. It's funny now that I'm in a place where we're working with people who outsource a lot of their labor. They needed to bring somebody in-house to manage that. And after some convincing by our founder, who is a very convincing gentleman, asked me to come take on that role. So I started as Vice President of Development and Community Relations in January of 2018. So essentially ran the mission side of what First Step does. I did the fundraising, board governance, worked with community partners, worked to really ensure that the services we were providing to the men and women we're employing were really making a difference in their lives. And our CEO and our operations team helped manage the operations of what First Step does. As a former CEO at First Step said, we're 51% business, 49% mission.
Because if we don't do the business of staffing well, we can't really fulfill our mission and place the men and women we do into employment.
So you really bring that dual side of the nonprofit piece and that mission base. So your background, it makes a lot of sense hearing you tell your story, why First Step Staffing obviously made a lot of sense to you based on the mission of it. And then also kind of rising up into the role of CEO and taking over the operations. We talk a lot about mentorship as it relates to rising up in your career. Maybe share a little bit about that with us. If someone in particular or a group of people played a significant role in kind of helping you get to this place.
Yeah, I've absolutely benefited from some pretty awesome mentors in my life. And to date, most of them have been in the nonprofit sector, whether they are working in the nonprofit sector and leading really great organizations, or they're sitting on boards and they're very successfully on a business front, but they're really passionate about the work that they do. And several of those have been very successful women. I have two women, the two Anns, Ann Curry and Ann Kramer from Cox Curry, that have guided me for years along my path. And I reach out to them whenever I'm struggling with something. They really are people that I turn to. I think what I'm starting to get now is some great potential mentors in the staffing industry. So thank you, Leslie, and others who are introducing me into this world, because I'm obviously much newer to this space. But I'm a big believer in reaching out and supporting other people and also trying to find those people who are knowledgeable in what they do, because I found 100% of the time, if you ask, people are willing to help.
I agree. And that's the thing, a key thing you just said. If you ask, people are willing to help. And sometimes people believe that they need to be part of a formalized program or, you know, if the company doesn't offer something. But in reality, there are always people out there willing to help. And like in the case you just mentioned in staffing, and you and I recently just met, and I'm so happy that our paths crossed and we're able to kind of pull you into different groups or conversations, and you can reach out and ask specific questions. And part of it is just being able to connect you with the right people where you maybe have a one-off question. And then in other cases, it may be that longer relationship, but it also doesn't always have to be really formal. It can be really informal too. So while we're happy to have you in the staffing industry, that is for sure. You're definitely making your mark as a CEO in the company and with First Step Staffing. I know you've had some rapid growth over recent time as well. So I guess I would ask you, aside from coming in to your role during, you know, some of the most challenging times we have faced, and I know any of our careers, what would you say has surprised you most as CEO?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think the surprises keep coming, but probably some of the biggest things I feel like that have been surprising. And one, quite honestly, is not a huge surprise stepping into the role, but I think it's just something you learn over time. I'm fairly young as a CEO. I'm 38 currently. And I think when you start out your career, you assume that CEOs and those in charge have all of the answers and that they're expected to know everything about the organization. And I think the more you work in business and the more that you're in your your career, you realize that that is not in fact true, that the really great leaders surround themselves with people who know how to do their jobs well, that you don't have to know everything, you just have to know where to look for it or where to find that support. So I think the longer I've gotten into this role now, you know, 4 months in here, that's more true than ever. I think that we are seeing the success that we have, and I think have some really impressive opportunities in front of us because of the team we've got assembled around me. You know, I'm hoping to lead some pretty innovative efforts, and I'm hoping that we can continue to bring First Step to new cities and do all the things that we're doing, but that wouldn't be possible without our internal team, our board members, and then a network of colleagues like yourself and others in the staffing industry who are reaching out to offer their support. So I think the surprising, not surprising thing about being a CEO is that it really is all about your team, supporting them, and finding the right people to help you lead. So hopefully I'll be able to do that well and have a really great team here at First Step. And I would say probably the second surprising thing is just some personal reflection for me. I think I was most concerned stepping into this role about all of the things that I didn't know, whether it be leading an organization, leading other C-suite level executives, or the staffing industry itself. And we've managed to get through some pretty difficult times with the pandemic and riots and other things happening around our communities and right outside our office. And we've weathered that storm, and I personally have found some internal resilience that I wasn't sure I had with my feet to the fire trying to manage through some difficult times in our world and in the staffing industry itself. So I think I've got some personal surprises that I've seen come out the last few weeks as well.
Talk a little bit about racial injustice here in a moment as well. But to start with, I guess, COVID, it's presented many obvious challenges from health to unemployment to companies needing to go remote with no warning, pretty much, to so much more. However, one big challenge is about to make its rounds again. So let's talk a little bit about this challenge, and it could potentially have devastating effects as it relates to actually women in the workforce. So CEO to CEO, I'd love to get your thoughts on this just personally, but also as you work with people on your team or mentor other people, what you're seeing. So specifically, while school districts around the US determine back to school plans, I know for our team too, you know, we're at risk. So working parents, we're at high risk for disengagement, attrition, and overall well-being. So based on data, it's clear that moms are at even more risk than dads. We have worked tirelessly to really gain representation for women. And I personally fear with all the work that we've done over the last several years that this will actually take us back significantly. And I just wanted to share two statistics from recent research to kind of back this concern. And I was fortunate to get this data from Michelle Webb with Tech Systems, actually had shared it with, as you know, a group we are part of talking about some D&I initiatives as well. And it says 46% of women report they will leave their workplace within the next year, and that women are nearly twice as likely as men to leave in the next year. So Amelia, what are you doing as an employer and CEO of your company and a mom to ensure parents, in particular mothers, feel supported? And maybe as you think about that, what you're going through, what advice would you have for other companies who are facing that challenge?
Yeah, well, this is definitely a topic that is near and dear to my heart, that I'm a mother, I've got three school-aged children, and as of this upcoming Monday, we'll be attempting to do virtual school for three of them while managing this new responsibility. I mean, I think, you know, it really, to your point, this is absolutely going to affect the women in our community and the mothers in our community in a much more negative way. Although I say that in two of my direct reports, one is a grandmother who has her grandchildren living with her and she's trying to balance school and things with them. And another is a single father with a really adorable 8-year-old girl, and he's having the same challenge. So I think for particularly our internal team here at First Step, I've really tried to promote flexibility, to promote working from home when at all possible, and tried to mirror that in myself. So I'm not showing up here every day 9 to 5. And I don't expect everybody else to do that as well, but I do expect the work to get done. And how can we be a team and do that together? Particularly, we have a lot of people in our office who don't have children and who are more comfortable being in the office. So they've really stepped up during this time to make sure that we've got the coverage that we need. So flexibility is really key, not just to promote it, but also to mirror that yourself. I think too, from the folks that we serve, this is obviously a major problem. I mean, childcare was already a barrier along with transportation. Transportation and childcare are the two biggest barriers our clients face. And now we've got this on top of it. So we're continuing to advocate with our customers, so there's businesses that we work with to do our placement, to advocate for flexible hours there whenever possible, or changes in shift times so they can actually get children to daycare if that's at all an option. And then just on a personal perspective, when you're talking to friends and colleagues, I think the biggest thing we can do right now is be forgiving of each other. I don't think we've ever experienced anything like this in our lifetime, and hopefully won't have to again. The pressures are huge, trying to balance school at home and work and being a good friend and being a good wife and mother and all of those things. So I think we have to be forgiving of ourselves and forgiving of others, because there's just a lot of pressure in the world right now to try and figure these things out.
It is that flexibility is obviously key. The forgiving ourselves. I know I'll sometimes wake up in the middle of the night panicked on something with Grayson. I have a 4-year-old son, as you know, and I just have to remind myself that we're all kind of doing the best that we can. And I love your thoughts on, you know, just be flexible in the fact that if people are getting their work done, and if they can do it during different times, now obviously not every role and every position that's the case, but where it is, to really be understanding of, you know, everyone's situation is so much different. And as long as people are trying and getting the work done, that's pretty critical. But being flexible in our thinking and really showing the human side of ourselves will be quite important. So humanity is key during these times.
Very true.
Amelia, while we were on the phone preparing for this conversation, you mentioned actually that your office is across the street from John Lewis's mural. And for those of you who don't know, John Lewis was an American politician and civil rights leader who served in the United States House of Representatives for Georgia's 5th Congressional District from 1987 and until his recent death, actually, in 2020, not too long ago. And he was one of the Big Six leaders. So if people don't know the background with him, one of the Big Six leaders of groups who organized the 1963 March on Washington. And he really fulfilled many critical roles in the civil rights movement and his actions to end legalized racial segregation in the United States. In fact, I think one day we were on the phone, there was even a rally near the mural, and you had, you know, pointed it out to me. So a pretty significant place where you are. But it really stood out to me was how appropriate was to kind of look out your window, see the John Lewis mural, and think about your own mission. And something I want to share, as writer Kimberly Jones has taught the country in the summer of 2020 in her viral video, and I'm happy to share a link if no one's seen it or just search it. The game is fixed. You can't understand racism without understanding the economics of it and the essential economic role, education, training, opportunities, jobs, mentorship, recognition, and advancement all play in creating equality in workplaces. So Amelia, for a moment here, let's focus on your business and again, the idea of alternative staffing. In 2019, First Step employed 6,355 unique individuals, of which 5,647, and yes, I'm writing these stats, had experienced homelessness. That's a big number. 2,577 were returning citizens and 295 were veterans. These individuals earn more than $44 million in paid wages, making First Step the largest alternative staffing organization in the U.S. So bringing this all home to John Lewis and the mural and your mission-based organization, it seems to me that we as an industry are sitting right at the intersection of being able to make real change as it relates to creating equality in the workplace. So I'd love to hear from you. What do you see as the future growth and role of alternative staffing? And how can we ensure we're breaking through the bonds of poverty and rise?
Those are some really weighty questions. And unfortunately, I don't know that there's any easy solutions. But I mean, the benefit of operating as an ASO, an alternative staffing organization, is that we are primarily mission driven and not profit driven. So we have no shareholders to answer to. We can really focus on the outcomes of those that we're placing into jobs, as opposed to focusing on making sure that our profit margins are exactly where they should be. So that is a big benefit because it allows us to intentionally focus on certain areas. I think on one layer, we've promoted from within to ensure that our internal staff is really supporting racial equity and inclusion in our hiring and in our leadership, that we're seeing that across the board. And we've been really great about that. 77% of our internal staff are female or minority. And because of our mission, we've intentionally sought out those that have been most disenfranchised from the workforce. And I would say 88% of the people we put to work today are a minority. So we're intentionally going out to find those individuals to give job opportunities that are otherwise they're prevented from applying. I mean, two specific examples. One of our clients out in Los Angeles came to us through one of the local shelters. Something inspired him that day, that week, to really start to make some changes in how he was living. He had not worked in 47 years, but was really committed to trying to get back out into the workforce and get his life on track. And very few people were willing to offer him a job, but that is exactly First Step strengths. If you come in and you're ready and willing to work, then we're going to offer you a job opportunity. There's no test to get through. There's no additional barriers we're going to put in place. You don't have to go sit in a classroom for several hours or weeks before we'll offer you a job. If you come in and are ready and willing to work, then we're going to see if you're ready to go. And we'll all place people within 24 to 48 hours. So that gentleman had his first job in 47 years and was extremely successful. We had a gentleman come into our office last week who had been in prison for 19 years. He burst into tears when we were able to offer him a job because he said nobody in his entire life had given him a legitimate way to earn money. So I think just offering the opportunities that have been previously denied to folks is a huge step in the right direction. But obviously, I mean, as you just stated with that quote from Ms. Jones, these are systemic problems. And I don't think that First Step or alternative staffing is going to solve on our own, but we can solve them for the individual if we can't solve it for the entire population. So if we can focus on doing the ones and helping one individual, one family get out of poverty and have an opportunity that they have been previously denied, then we can make a difference.
Maybe there's a way through alternative staffing as well. You bring up a really good point. I mean, obviously you're mission driven and that's aligned with what you're doing and helping people. And as we think about what all of our companies are doing and ways that we're giving back in the staffing industry, maybe there's some way for us to align some of our profit-driven, revenue-driven mentality with the alternative staffing options as well as a way to partner with groups like you too. So that's something that...
Absolutely. And Leslie too, I think the other thing that we can look at, I mean, there is some good work being done by some other groups like the Aspen Institute, the National Fund for Workforce Solutions, that really focuses on job quality. And as staffing companies, we serve two dual customers, right? We've got the individuals replacing, but then we also have all of these businesses who control the work environment. And if we can continue to be advocates for good quality work environments for the people we're placing, I think that would make a huge difference too. So that people have fair wages for work, that they have opportunities for breaks, they have opportunities to get, you know, vacation and other things that groups that are typically working those entry-level jobs don't necessarily have. And for some people, all they may ever work is an entry-level job. So anything that we can do to advocate for quality employment as a staffing industry, I think is extremely helpful as well.
I agree. And we've seen, you know, the rise in upskilling and reskilling and opportunities to help those who, like the story you shared, like someone who's just looking for that first opportunity to have a job after so many years, and then now looking at ways you can continue to help people kind of rise as it makes sense for them, but getting, you know, beyond poverty and presenting those opportunities. And we do have great organizations. I know, you know, the YWCA here in Chicago recently launched a program as well to help people as it relates to just education and getting them funding, and almost like a scholarship kind of approach to where they can get funding that they wouldn't have to get that education piece, and then working with staffing companies on placement. There's a lot of groups doing some pretty amazing things. Again, I have to think that within our industry and staffing, there's something of significance we can do. So I look forward to continuing to get to know the mission-based and organizations around alternative staffing. So thank you for sharing that. Staying on the topic of equality, the World Economic Forum projects that equality in the United States is still another 208 years away. And I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast in the past because it just, the number floors me when I really put it into context. So 208 years is around six generations. And when I think of six generations, even Amelia, if you just think of your own children and how long, many years it'll be, my son is four and it probably wouldn't even be his his great-great-grandchildren before there would even be equality. And I think back to even our great-grandmothers who fought for the right to vote in the U.S. officially on August 26th, coming up here. Maybe we'll launch this podcast on that day in 1920, 100 years ago. And, you know, I think this podcast, it's specific to women in recruitment. However, the message really transcends to everyone. So Amelia, I'd love to hear from you as far as in our day-to-day lives. And you mentioned in the last comment to really focus on the one. And that brings me to the day-to-day lives and thinking about our lives at home, even with our own children. So what can we do with our kids to break the cycles of racism, sexism, stereotyping, and other forms of bias? I really would love to ignore these stats that we're 208 years away and just ensure we're making the change that we hope to see. I'd love to get your thoughts on that, how it starts at home.
Yeah, I mean, again, another really weighty question. This is definitely something I've wrestled with for years. In a brief period in between jobs, when apparently I just had to stay very active, I got involved with another group called Power Over Prejudice, and their message is Stop Stereotypes. And it's an entire program built for middle school students to help them understand bias, understand what a stereotype is, understand how we react to things, but they do it in a way that is through games and conversations and make it very fun. And they do it by bringing in groups from all over the city of Atlanta. So people have an opportunity to be in the same place, on the same playing field with people that maybe they don't interact with on their daily lives. And the thing that really struck me about that program is people built friendships out of it. They built really authentic relationships out of that experience. There was another initiative here called the Friendship Initiative that two gentlemen started, and it was based off building friendships that were not business related. Nobody was trying to promote anything or close a deal, but it was African American minority men and women partnered with white men and women from various businesses. And the entire goal was just to get to know each other and get to know each other's families and start to build relationships that were really authentic. So I think demonstrating those in your daily life, you know, it's not just about going and volunteering at a soup kitchen and saying, you know, we're going to help people who are living in poverty and it's an us and a them. It's really about having great relationships that are built into your daily lives of people who aren't like you are, whether it's they're in a different socioeconomic place, they're in a different race, different backgrounds, different places that they were raised, different ages, and what they bring to the table and the richness that that can bring. But I think you have to do that as an individual and as a parent, and your kids will mimic what they see. And the other thing, I think you have to have really honest conversations with your children. They see a lot of what's happening in the world. They're exposed to it between all of the news channels and YouTube videos. And I think you have to be able to have those really tough conversations with your children as they get older and, you know, make it age appropriate, but be able to talk about the hard things and why your family chooses to do these things in a different way or says or doesn't say things because of the way that they are interpreted by other people. So I think it's both of those. Be intentional and authentic.
Yeah, I agree. The intentionality of it is so critical because otherwise, if you, you know, look around and all you see are the same people and you don't do anything about it, your kids just continue to be raised in that type of a community. And I know for us as a family, I've had a lot of learning to do over the course of the past several months since the killing of George Floyd. And I just appreciate being really intentional in my thinking and my actions and thinking about Grayson and even the school he goes to and better understanding their philosophy and principles as well. And just being, again, that word is, I think, really important right now, which is intentional in our actions to learn and embrace and engross ourselves and make sure our kids, that next generation, have an opportunity to continue to see that and make that same change, perhaps change that we didn't have growing up. So thank you for that. And we'll definitely share these resources out as well. So I appreciate all of the different companies and organizations you have mentioned. It's always helpful. So Amelia, you're the CEO of a company, and not just any company, a company in rapid growth mode. And it's a lot of responsibility. And I know we've already talked about about some heavy topics here in this podcast, but making trade-offs is familiar territory for professional women. We've learned over the years through different surveys we've actually conducted through the Women in Tech group I co-founded that both men and women equally struggle with balancing family outside of work life and a career. And a really good friend of ours in the industry, if you haven't met her yet, Dana Luc-Aramoto, she's phenomenal. She actually calls it harmonious integration. Yet women, in again, these surveys that we conduct, even though everyone struggles with it, women still feel like it holds them back much more than men. So as a CEO and a mother, do you believe we have to make trade-offs? And how do you coach the women on your teams to maybe think a little bit differently about how they want to reach their goals and that you can do both? You can have a stellar career and you can have a kind of quote unquote healthy life. And I'm going to throw in one last question here, Amelia. Let's get it real. We talked about being authentic. Do you find sometimes that you even have to convince yourself that it's possible?
Yes. Yeah. Quick answer. Yes. You know, I think the whole work-life balance, healthy lifestyle, unique to each person. Every person has a different definition of what that means. I mean, I will say for me, I think a daily balance is a myth and impossible, but I tell myself if I can have a weekly balance or monthly or even a year where I feel like I've balanced all the moving parts really well, then I'll chalk that up to a year of success. And that there's going to be days where I feel like a really awesome CEO and a really cruddy mother, and there'll be days where that's flipped. And I think you just have to, as we've said it before, you've got to have a lot of forgiveness for yourself and understanding. I think for me, I've always said, if I'm trying my best, then that's all I can do.
Yeah, I think so too. And even saying this question out loud during a pandemic feels a little silly because how the balance just sometimes isn't there. And all of the things that I continue to try to work on for myself is continuing to try to find that. But something you had mentioned before, and what I mean by that is just actually being healthy and self-care plays a lot into that, because what'll end up happening is we're trying to give to everyone else and then we forget about ourselves. So focusing on, you know, sleep, drinking water, eating healthy, exercising, whatever that healthy is for you, reading books, meditating, we have to remember to be forgiving of ourselves and to take care of ourselves is really critical. And I think the main message for me when I hear you say these things and listen to other men and women talk about just finding balance is that you don't have to choose one over the other. You can actually have a family, have a career, do both. And a really key part of that is having a good partner who can help be supportive of you in achieving those goals. So that's something that.
Yeah. And I am blessed with that, a very good partner. And he actually said something to me. So in between kind of my windy path to staffing and CEO role, I did take some time off in between jobs when my children were very young. And at the time, it felt like the hardest decision in the world. It felt like it was going to permanently damage any future career path I might want to take, and that I was letting myself down because here I was with a college degree, but I was going to choose to stay home. And he just kept telling me, it's not a decision forever. You can change your mind in 3 months or next week and we can do something else. This is not a decision that makes or breaks the rest of your life. We can figure it out. And I think constantly reminding myself of that has helped me get to where I am. This can be a decision for now, but it doesn't mean it's a decision forever.
And that's the thing, Amelia, just telling our stories and hearing your story and the changes or decisions that you made as a family. What I love about it is it helps other people realize that they're not alone on this journey and that what they're going through may not be different than what others have done, and that they have people they can learn from and realize that they can take different courses in their career. And speaking of that, so what I love about that is I do believe that being your own career champion and having confidence do tend to go hand in hand. And more often than not, women are overlooked for promotions or don't perform as well on performance reviews because they aren't always proactively championing themselves. So like sharing individual and team successes and often wait to be handed something rather than going for it. That said, in your case, by making some of the decisions that you were just talking about, you certainly had to be a champion of yourself. And I'm guessing that based on your role and path to the CEO, you were were your own champion and you had people who supported you along the journey, but perhaps you could share a story in your own career path where you felt like you really had to step up, whether it's, you know, switching industries or going forward at the CEO role, whatever it may be. What did you do? And what advice would you have for other up-and-comers to ensure they're not just sitting back and waiting that, you know, people will automatically see what they're doing and give them that promotion that they really need to speak up for themselves?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I mean, my husband will tell you I'm my own worst champion because I definitely am always more worried again about what I don't know than the things that I've accomplished. And thankfully, I've had really strong supporters, like my husband, a really close circle of friends, previous colleagues who will remind me of that, even when I sometimes forget. And for me, speaking up for myself is absolutely one of my hardest things to do. I'm not comfortable with it. If you want to talk about how I can help solve a problem or can look at a new opportunity, I will be first in line to help do that, but I don't always take credit or recognize my role in that. So for me, if I know I'm going to have those really hard conversations, I have to give myself pep talks. And then I have to do it right out of the gate, the first part of the conversation, if I'm having a meeting with a boss or a colleague that I know is going to be a harder conversation for me because of that. I need to do it first and then deal with the rest of the business after that, because otherwise it just lingers for me and I think about it throughout the entire conversation, day, week, whatever that is. But it's definitely, that's probably one of my biggest challenges, Leslie, is being my own champion.
Well, saying it out loud, we can now all hold you accountable. I don't know if you've read the book, How Women Rise. It's something we talked about.
No, but I did listen to that podcast this morning. I got to tell you, and I ordered it on Amazon. So there we go.
Well, Teresa Carroll, if you're listening, you should definitely get some commission on book sales because I think a lot of people have heard you share your story over the past few months and a few speaking opportunities and on our podcast. But a couple things you mentioned, ruminating, that is like one of the things that I'm working on to really improve. And then as well, just kind of being your own champion and seeing in yourself what others see in you. But Amelia, there's also something to be said about being a humble CEO and kind of bringing your human to work, so to speak, as an author, Erica Cuswin, talks about, that will make you, you're authentically you, yourself, and that's what's going to make you shine as a leader. And knowing that it isn't always comfortable to talk about yourself and what your achievements are, sometimes you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. So I look forward to being on this journey with you, and I'm sure others will learn from it. So with that, I have a final question for you, and that's if you would share with us the best piece of advice you have ever been given. What was it, and then how did you apply that to either your personal or professional life?
So my mom's favorite saying, I mean, I probably heard her say it 1,000 times in my life, is this too shall pass. And I think it's two ways. You know, if something is going really good, it's not guaranteed to last. So really enjoy those moments that you have before you and the place in life that you're in. But also with the hard stuff, you know, the hard stuff is not going to be there forever either. So you'll get through it. So I think that piece of advice just really sticks with me because it encourages you every time I say it, that you really need to be in the moment, the good, the bad, the ugly, and know that something new is coming around the bend.
I would say this too shall pass is very appropriate for what we are in today. So thank you.
Yes.
For sharing those words of wisdom. And Amelia, let's say someone's listening to the podcast and they'd love to learn more about your background and alternative staffing and first step staffing. How would they be able to get in touch with you?
So probably the easiest ways for folks to find me, I am on LinkedIn and I check that pretty regularly if people want to reach out on LinkedIn. And then our website, firststepstaffing.com, so just all spelled out, lowercase, has all my contact information. It's got some great information about the organization, but I've got my phone number and email there too. And I'm happy to answer phone calls and emails. I love reaching out to the network that is staffing right now. I've learned a lot so far and I look forward to connecting with more individuals.
Now, Leslie, probably the last thing I'd like to do today is just take a moment to remember our founder, Greg Block. Sadly, Greg lost his battle to cancer just a couple of weeks ago. It's a huge loss to the organization, to our community, and to the alternative staffing sector. And to me personally, Greg was a huge mentor for me. He was fearless in the things he believed in and what he tried to accomplish. So the First Step family is sending our thoughts to Greg's family, his mother, his wife, his 3 children, and just an assurance that we intend to continue that legacy of what Greg started here at First Step.
I'm so sorry to hear about your loss, Amelia. Something you mentioned stood out to me, that Greg was fearless in what he believed in and what he tried to accomplish. He certainly picked the right person and leader in you to carry the torch. Listen, I know I hit you with some heavy questions today.
But those are the times we are in, and I just really appreciate you being a part of our industry. And again, congratulations on joining the C-suite as CEO, and I look forward to watching continued great things come from you and your company.
Thank you so much for having me, Leslie.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest, or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.